Hi, I'm Christina Applegate.
And I'm Jamie Lynn Sigler.
And this is
Messy. On today's episode of Messy, we have Christina's dear friend, the one and only Martin Short. And I have to say that, you know, some of our conversations on this podcast are, you know, heavy and heartfelt and deep and like therapy. But also we want to bring you times when we laugh and share stories and reminisce. And this conversation with, as his friends call him, Marty Short, is one of those times. And I took this, witnessing Christina talk to him, as a lesson to reach out to somebody from your past. So, you know, when you're feeling defined by your trauma or whatever might be plaguing you or you're dealing with in your life, find someone from a time in your life where it felt a little bit lighter or brighter, and talk about those times and those stories and those memories, because I really think they're healing and they're a reminder that we're not defined by what we deal with. We are so much more than that. And I felt that so much for Christina when we recorded this episode. So enjoy.
Can I intro you?
Yes. And action.
Thank you, my love. Hi, everybody. So today is an incredibly exciting day because we have not one of the funniest people I know. He is the funniest person that I know, on and off. And he is delightful. He is kind. He's hilarious. He's the star of stage and screen and probably a couple corners on a street somewhere. But one of my favorite people in the entire world, the incomparable, incredibly talented Martin Short.
Oh my God, what an intro. That was so well delivered from my writing.
And so fake. Yep.
Yes.
How you doing, mister?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I like your layered look. I know everyone can't see you, but I'm loving your layered look.
I know. This is Armani. Very hip.
Of course it is.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Marty and I had dinner with our friend Sean McGuire and my little child, Sadie, a couple months ago. And I remember walking around the corner at the restaurant and you were in, it felt like a Christian Dior, like gray suit. And you were like full hottie. You were giving me full hottie. I was like, whoa. Because normally I just think you look like trash, but you look fucking good.
Show up looking like a hobo.
Yeah. Like I did. Well,
that was my go-to Halloween costume, by the way. Whenever I didn't have anything prepared, my mother would dress me as a hobo, which is.
Oh, yeah. It was always that. That was the thing.
Are we allowed to say hobo? Or are they there aren't hobos.
Well,
anymore.
I don't know. Probably not.
No, well, because that's a kerchief on the stick. And I don't think there are.
Which, by the way, stands for homeward bound. I looked it up. So okay.
Well, actually, that's kind of delightful.
Less offensive?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess.
But I have a feeling, I don't think hobo is one of those words that you just, I couldn't hear Biden's using hobo.
No.
Well, actually, I could.
Yeah, look at all you hobos out there. No, I think if you're referring to a group of people, that's probably not good. But we're talking about, you know, the 1930s.
No, we're talking hobos. About, you know, a classic that, you know, we can, you know what? Clip, clip, yeah, clip, clip, yeah.
There we go.
Ha, ha, ha.
Can you tell me how you two know each other?
Oh, God.
We met in 2000. Whatever you call it, 2000, on the set of a marvelous film called Prince Charming that took about 8 years to come out. It was that hot.
Did it even ever come out?
Yes, on TNT.
Oh, right. Okay. I'm sorry. Yeah, I played with the horse and the carriage. I played a carriage rider driver. And
in Central Park.
And
we were transported. Was I a frog at one point? I can't remember.
No. Sean was a frog, right? Because I had to kiss Sean McGuire. That's an actor. That's who we had the dinner. And that's why he played a prince. And then you guys were from a different time, the medieval
times.
Yes,
Bernadette Peters was in it. Andrea Martin.
Yep. Who was the comedian guy? The Scottish. What was his name? Come on. Oh God.
Oh, Billy Connolly.
Billy Connolly. Really funny. Right. Really cool little cast. And we got in trouble every day because
we had fun.
We had fun. But the people that were trying to get things on film were not, I don't think, very pleased with us for most of the time.
Oh, I ain't pleased. You know, they were lucky to know us.
There's that. But we had so much fun.
No, I mean, I really do. But really, when you think of it, when you make a movie or do anything, the only thing that you can control is having fun doing it. Because you don't know if the end result's going to be a nightmare. The director is horrible, going to make only bad choices. But at least you can have laughs doing it. I tend to close down if it gets tense, you know.
Yeah, well, that's no fun anyway. But I have to look back on like my journeys in this whole thing and say that was probably the most fun I've ever had on set because of you and Sean.
That was a riot. We had a riot. And Sean, too. Sean, how sweet is Sean?
So the best. It was a great time. So we've known each other for 23 years.
That's right.
And you're still friends since 2000.
Well, it depends on which one of us you ask is really the question.
Yeah.
I love you so much.
The last time Christina came up to me, we were outside of a mall and I just turned to her and said, I'm not signing. So, you know, I don't always recognize.
Asshole.
Yeah.
Christina loves a mall.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Especially with MS. Malls are fun. Malls are good fucking time with the fluorescent lighting and the humans.
Well, by the way, I can't speak for the world, but I haven't been in a mall for a long time.
Yeah, there's no reason.
It's not no longer hip.
No, you buy stuff on the line.
Yeah, on the line. Buy stuff on the line.
You buy stuff on the line, okay?
Yeah. They go to that thing called the line.
Yeah, the line. Another thing I wanted to bring up because it makes me sound like really, really cool is I think it was like for 15 years, I think Marty and I did Shakespeare together, which is like,
that's right.
You would never hear all of those words in one sentence.
Never.
Christine Applegate, Martin Short, and Shakespeare. No. Well, maybe
well, no one, you know why? Because no one was really asking for it.
No.
No.
It's not real. I mean, it's real. We do a good job, but
you know what? Sure. I tend to go a little broad, which is a stretch for me. It's like, you heard me. You heard me.
He never went off book. He never took center stage.
Wait, I need more details about
it. I was in a nude suit at one point, you know.
Oh, my. Where was this?
Simply Shakespeare. Explain.
Simply Host. Shakespeare yes. is this wonderful organization that brings Shakespeare into like inner city schools and kids that don't have as much to be able to learn this like beautiful poetry that this guy wrote. And so it was a fundraiser for this organization and we did it every year and we no longer do it. And it makes me really, really sad, but it was the most fun you can have in.
Why don't we do it?
I think without throwing under the bus, rhymes with Ida and Lom don't want to do it anymore. So yeah, I think COVID happened. That was a big thing. And it was so stupid because you had on the stage, this group.
Oh, it was insane.
Oh,
yeah.
Like mind blowing people.
Who else would do it with you guys?
Oh, William Shatner did it 1 year.
Wow.
No, William did it a few years.
Yeah,
I was there for 15 years straight, basically.
Yeah.
And then you, me, Jason Alexander, and Bill were kind of like the ones that were always there because we never had anything else going on.
No, when no one's hiring you, you sure have time.
You do.
Right.
But we had like Kenneth Branagh. We had a cat, like some of the biggest stars in the world. But I know who my dorkiest like moment was, and then I want to know if it's yours the same, the person that was there.
I know who you're gonna say.
Well, why don't you say it then?
Paul McCartney.
Fuck yeah. Paul McCartney.
He did it? He acted in it?
Well, what they'd have you know, you'd arrive there in the morning, you read your script for the first time, and you'd get on stage and you hold your scripts as you go through kind of a blocking. And but then there's a band to the side, and they would have a different hip, you know, band leader each year. When it was Smokey Robinson one year.
Bette Midler.
But that year was McCartney. Yeah.
Oh, I see.
We had Natalie Cole. We had Faith Hill, Tim McGraw, Reba McEntire. But we're talking like this is some high-end stuff. But I was gonna say the funniest videos that I have from that is when Paul's rehearsing. I mean, he's singing everything. He's singing Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. This is happening on this stage.
And there's just us. Yeah.
Just us.
In rehearsal.
And I have video of all of us videoing each other, videoing him.
I have video. You have it too.
I know.
We should all send it and have someone edit it properly.
Everyone was doing it. Tom was and Rita were filming. You were filming. I mean, it's just the funniest.
I don't think there's ever a moment when you're with a Beatle that you can't. It's hard to compute.
Yeah. I could imagine.
Yeah. It was pretty cool, I have to say. And doing that and was always when I got to see Marty, and that was always my happy time of the, I'm not the bullshitting. Like I loved when you were there. I remember coming
in
dinner, and there's like everyone's around the table having dinner, and it's just us, like the 20, maybe 10, maybe whatever amount of huge, incredible artists. And I walk in and Marty yells out in front of everyone, 1990 called and Hammer wants his pants back. And he embarrassed me in front of everyone. You did. You're such an asshole.
Well, you'd made a little bit of mistake in the morning with your selections. Big deal.
You know, Christina, when I came to visit you a couple of weeks ago, I feel like you might have had those pants on.
I probably did. And I probably have had them on for like 5 or 6 days. So don't go too close to this call. Also, I want to say to you, okay, Only Murders, I can't. Like, I haven't started the third season because Sadie won't let me watch it without her. So I just want to tell you, like, it's just
Hilarious.
Yeah,
that's
hilarious. Like, he's making me wait.
I love it so much.
Ah, thanks.
It's just joy. It's just
I think third season you'll enjoy because of Meryl Streep, but Paul Rudd is on fire.
I love him so
Jesse
much.
Jesse Williams, fabulous.
Amazing.
Andrea Martin, brilliant.
I can't wait.
So this is a forum where Christina and I talk freely and openly about a lot of different things, a lot of different topics. One of the things, unfortunately, that we have in common is MS, and that, you know, requires us to talk a lot about the medical stuff we deal with. And I heard once that you used to have like colonoscopy sleepovers with
some
of your friends before this procedure. And I think I would love to know more about this because this could be something, Christina, you and I could possibly do.
Yeah.
Well, the idea was turning a colonoscopy into a dinner party. So it would be Tom Hanks and myself.
Name drop.
And Steve Martin and our friend Walter Parks. And the four of us would have a sleepover at Steve's. We'd all, you know, and the barium or whatever it is was put out on the table with Jell-O and the things you can eat. And we would toast each other and do that. Then we'd play cards. And then at no point were there four people at the table. And then, you know, by the morning, his bathroom looked like day 15 of a carnival cruise. But then we go to this clinic. It was private, you know, because we were hip and famous. And then we all have colonoscopies. And then we go to the Ivy for lunch.
I didn't know the Ivy part. I knew about the pooping together part, but I didn't know about the Ivy afterwards.
Ivy, yeah. And have a margarita.
Yeah, what a beautiful way to end.
Because you hadn't eaten.
Right, right. No, I know. I mean, I've had a few of those in my life, and I do it alone, and it's very lonely. Very loud, but very lonely.
No. But I think that, you know, a colonoscopy party. So we did this about three different times.
You know more? You don't
because everyone's on different schedules.
Yeah.
Someone has a polyp, someone doesn't, you know.
Oh my God, to be a fly on the wall of that would be incredible.
Yeah, it's pretty fun.
When's the last time you saw Tom? Because I feel sad because
I had dinner with Tom two nights ago.
You did? How are they doing?
They're great. Fabulous. Okay.
Yeah, they're lovely people. And
fabulous.
Yeah, I miss seeing everybody.
I met Tom in 1983.
Oh. Why? How? Not why.
John Candy and he were making Splash. And we were assembling in LA. John would get us to do stuff like this where we were going to make a video for his high school back in Ontario. And we were all meeting in the, I guess we were doing a recording or a show, or I can't remember. Anyway, he brought this young actor, Tom Hanks, over. And Tom was later said it was like he was scared to meet all the SCTV people because everyone was there. Eugene, Levy and Andrea and Catherine O'Hara.
Wow.
We'd all assembled for John's charity.
Wow.
So you were all Canadian?
Oh.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Canadian. Wow. How does that feel being Canadian? Like, what was that? Like cargo shorts and the...
Well, it's an interesting... I mean, I think I always thought like Canada was the middle of three sisters. You know, you had kind of the sophisticated Emma Thompson older sister in England. And you had like, you know, the hip chick, that's the States. And we were like kind of in the middle, more attractive than we thought we were, but a little bit shyer and more like the middle sister who doesn't get the attention. Wow. And then that was kind of the old days. And now I think it's shifted because Canada.
We ain't the cool sister.
No, anymore. That's what I'm saying.
we're getting arrested all the time.
Yeah. So, but you know, Canada's it has 34 million people or something like that. And it has more land mass than the United States. Healthcare, like in Ontario, you know, there are provinces, that's Toronto and Ottawa and cities like that in Ontario, big, big province. And healthcare started in 1961.
I think that's just the coolest thing ever. Yeah, we got to figure something out here. But what I love is like you just sat there and named like the most incredible comedic artists like of our time, all coming from one place. Like,
yeah, it's and Dan Aykroyd was around too.
Yeah,
and Gilda.
Yep,
it was a bit like Paris in the 20s. It was around 1972, and we did this production of Godspell. We were all just in university, but it was Gilda and Eugene and myself and Paul Schaefer and Dave Thomas and Victor Garber.
It's right. I mean, that's like, I read your book. So, I mean, I know
it was amazing.
I know more about you than you know about yourself. Anyway, no, I don't. But just when I was reading that, and I'm like, holy shit, it was just like one group of people like together and that were legendary. I mean, what you guys have done is just... I mean, not you so much as the others, but...
No, I know. I understand, I get it.
You are my hero. You're my hero. I love you so much. But just incredible.
Love you too.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that was an amazing time. Yeah.
I'm sure, like, creatively, just...
Well, then it kind of extends because then there was that Canadian scene of... And then Lorne Michaels, also Canadian, started SNL, and his first hire was Gilda.
That's so incredible.
Yeah. I remember meeting Lauren backstage of Godspell when we, you know, because we did it for a year, this group. Danny Aykroyd was always a guy who just was around but wasn't really working. I mean, it was amazing.
That's so
I first met Danny, it was at Gilda's birthday, because Gilda and I dated for a while. And it was Gilda's birthday, and Danny and his comedic partner at the time, Valerie Bromfield, were playing Gilda's parents and stayed in character at the party. It was like so odd and so original and so funny.
Wow. And then what happened? So Godspell happened. And for people who don't know the whole story.
Then Second City formed a sister company in Toronto. And Lorne kind of checked all these people up and ended up hiring, obviously that first cast, including Gilda from Godspell and Toronto Second City. And then SCTV started in 1976. So one was Canadian, one was big US.
God, you're so much older than me. I forget.
I know. Remember, when we were working together, Survivor was now on TV and my nickname was Rudy because Rudy was 52. And I was 50
in like 3 weeks.
Yeah, you're the new Rudy.
I am the new Rudy.
Yeah.
Aw. Did you pass the torch to me, Marty? It's okay. It's
well,
okay.
I was Rudy too. I was only 50 when I was dubbed Rudy.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
You are children.
Rudy was a children. Rudy was this like curmudgeon-y. How did you describe Rudy from Survivor? If anyone,
I never watched Survivor. Really, I think he was just the old one.
Oh, so I just named you Rudy.
Yeah, based on me being old and you being young.
Marty, do you watch any reality television?
None.
Good for you.
Good for you.
I don't.
He's around creatives. He's around all these people.
I don't know. I mean, no. First of all, here's what I'm exhausted by kind of low class people. So I'm not drawn toward low class people. Shut up! Get back here, you know, screaming and shut up. I'd rather see a thing on, you know, Prince Philip's early years. I'd rather see a documentary.
So posh.
I am very posh.
You're so posh.
I will say though, Ria, I was thinking about this the other day because Christina and I unfortunately watch a lot or fortunately watch a lot of reality television. It's one of the things that bonds us.
And you know, there are books you could read.
I know.
I'm not really, don't know how to read. So
I know that. Even in the old days, they had a little earwig fitted into her ear. So just feed the lines. Yeah.
I just started 2 years ago. So that's kind of I just started 2 years ago when I got diagnosed. So let's just have a tear for me. Anyway, I started watching reality TV and well, of course, your show is the only scripted show I watch. And then TV. And in the 2 years that I've been watching from my bed, I have watched probably 300 hours of reality television, I would imagine, probably more.
But I mean, doesn't the element, would you want to hang with a lot of those people?
No, not at all.
No.
I'm sorry, guys, for the reality. No, some of them are, I'm actually friends with some people now, but more from like below deck, you know, like the stews and stuff like that. I have slipped into their DMs and become friends with Captain Lee, who's this guy from below deck, and he's amazing. And Kate Chastain and Daisy from, you know, like I'm more the below deck people because they're really interesting.
Is Below Deck a reality show?
It is, but it's not a bunch of people yelling at each other.
It takes place on a yacht.
Yeah, on a super yacht. And it follows the crew around. So they are doing a job. They are actually like doing a job. So they're not.
But
like,
you see that I'm just saying if it was following a crew around and they're all kind of polite and there's a little edge that I could see myself getting into that. It's the screaming and the fighting.
Yeah, I get very uncomfortable with the screaming and the fighting, yeah. And that's my childhood. So I don't like it.
Yeah, exactly.
But what were you going to say, James? I'm sorry.
I was just going to say though, but I feel like it's a specific talent to be a reality star in which you're almost willing to let yourself be used.
Yes, it's called having no shame.
That's right.
Yeah.
Right. And when you abandon any kind of, I don't care what they say about me, to hell with my epitaph, it does free you up.
Yeah, but then these people get so pissed off when the public like shames them and stuff. They're like, the fans are saying this about me. It's like, you've put yourself in this situation, but I guess people could say that to us, right? Like if we got mad.
Absolutely. Right? But that's why I'm not on social media and I read nothing.
Okay, well, you shouldn't. And you have saved yourself a lifetime of really just wasting time.
Yeah.
For sure.
Just Googling your own name? Yeah.
Yeah, no, I don't do that. But I was asked to be a housewife for Beverly Hills.
No.
Oh, really?
When? You didn't know this? I didn't tell you this?
No, when?
They asked me to be one probably 10 years ago,
wow.
I would say. And what's funny is I ended up becoming really good friends with the executive producer of it because our kids went to school together. And he's like, oh, yeah, we asked you. I said, Chris, now that you know me, would I have been a fun housewife? He's like, no, it would have been the most boring shit I've ever seen in my life. I'm like, yes, I wouldn't have shown up to any dinners. I would have been in my sweatpants and I'd be laying in bed. What fun is that? No, none of that. No, I would be the worst housewife anyway.
It's my type of fun.
Yeah, exactly. Messy is sponsored by BetterHelp.
This podcast has been my therapy in very many ways. We've talked about how important therapy has been in our lives. We've since our teens, right? We've both been in therapy.
Yes.
But, you know, it's so easy to ignore what's going on in life. We could blame ourselves and of why we're dealing with it or not dealing with it well. But the truth is, as human beings, we are all needing the tools to get through life, no matter what you are dealing with.
Yeah. I was 13 when I started therapy.
Amazing.
I just love that, like, therapy has become the norm.
It has.
Like, the norm for people, and there's no stigma. I love that. I love that people aren't like, well, if I go to therapy, then I'm nuts. You know, you're not. Mm-hmm. You just need to talk to someone. And sometimes your friends ain't going to be those people. And sometimes your parents ain't going to be those people. I don't know why I'm saying ain't so much, but apparently that's the region I'm from right now.
Ain't that the truth, Christine? And I have help for you, because guess what? BetterHelp is where you can find a therapist. Because if you are thinking of starting therapy, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, suited to your schedule. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire. You get matched with a licensed therapist. And by the way, if you don't like that therapist, you can switch anytime for no additional charge. It's awesome.
Just do it, because we all need it. There's so many things going on in the world, whether we get into like what's happening outside of our land, outside of our home, and that creates such stress upon people, or you've got some crap you've got to freaking deal with from your childhood that you're holding on to, it's, you know, defining who you are. It's defining the way you're operating in the world. To just sit down with someone who is objective and listens, nothing you say is bad or good. Everything you say is exactly what needs to be heard and felt. So
that's right. Visit betterhelp.com/messy today to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp, HELP.com/messy.
What else is going on, Marty, in your life?
Steve Martin and I have been doing some live shows here and there.
Oh, so good. Have you ever seen like footage of that show, Jamie?
No.
Oh, you have to. Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
Well, we did a Netflix special a couple years ago, but now it's called You Won't Believe What They Look Like Now.
What? You guys look exactly the same as you did.
That is true.
And they have two pictures of us in our 30s on the poster. But no, it's great fun. And we do it with Steep Canyon Rangers and Jeff Babko. And we just did 4 cities, and then we'll do 4 more next week.
Are you doing any here?
No, we did the Hollywood Bowl last year, 3 nights, and that was...
Oh, I know that. I knew that. I couldn't come because I was sick.
Well, I'm just saying that...
I know. Maybe someday.
Anytime. But... Someday.
I don't know. The two of you together it's magic. And then, you know, thank God someone was like, let's make a show with the two of you together, because there's just nothing like it.
What was your first project, you and Steve together?
3 Amigos.
That was the first movie that my brother, I had 2 older brothers growing up, and the first movie that they allowed me to watch with them. And I'll never, so it holds such a special place in me, not only because I loved it, but I just remember just feeling so grown up and finally part of the crowd because they brought me to that movie. I loved it so much.
That's nice. Well, that you mean the theater, you went to the theater.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's exciting when you get to go to the theater. I never introduced it to my kids ever.
Really?
Because then every time, you know, I tend to like finish something, and by the time if you're a producer on it, by the time it comes out, you've seen it so many times, and then you never ever really want to see it again. And so I was always afraid that, you know, I'd always come home and there'd be the 3 Amigos on TV. And so, but when Ollie was around 9, he came, or 10, came over from a friend's house and said, Dad, did you know you made a Western? Yes, I did.
That's really funny. That must have been quite a set with the 3 of you. Oh my God.
That was fun. It was loose.
It was, yeah. It seems like loose. It might have been quite loose and hilarious.
And we had great fun, played a lot of Scrabble, I remember, in Chevy's trailer. And we had many, many laughs. Many laughs.
What year was that? I can't remember.
We made it in early 1986.
Wait, and that's the first time you and Steve did anything together?
Yeah, I met him. Yeah, I met him in, I went to his house in July, because I have a Rain Man thing, 13th, 1985.
Wow.
And
wow. You know that.
Yeah. And to pick up a script for Three Amigos.
Wow.
And we talk about it in our show, but I literally, and it's true, I looked around his house because there was a Picasso here and a Hopper there, and you know, and I said, how did you get this rich? Because I've seen your work. And
and that was it.
Yeah.
Partnership was made.
There you go.
I've only met him like once, and I think it was at your house.
Yeah.
For your infamous Christmas party that I was only invited to once. I guess I didn't make that good of an impression.
Well, you know, we had to and the list kept growing. I'm sorry.
It's okay. But with Applegate, I should be at the top because of A, but that's okay. Yeah,
or it's an easy first cut.
There you go.
You know, when you start cutting, you're usually aggressive and then you ease off.
Right.
If you're Applegate, you're in trouble.
Okay. Yeah. And it's done well for me. Anywho. But I remember this party, which, you know, we don't have to like whatever you want to say about it. It was the coolest thing I've ever been to in my life, because you're literally running. You're like, every person that is there is someone that I've like idolized and look up to, because they were so much older than me, everyone there. Anywho. And what's the deal? Like, people plan for like a year to perform at it.
No, it started up very, it's just, you know, in a living room, and Mark Shaman of Fairspray fame and he and I would push the piano out just below a Christmas tree. And then people in the living room or standing in the kitchen or dining room would come up and perform. And some of them, and then it became, in the first year we did it spontaneous, then like the next year, people would prepare stuff. And then suddenly Mark had to come an hour before the party for rehearsal. Because Catherine O'Hara would be rehearsing something with her sister, Mary Margaret, or Nathan Lane was showing up that year. So, you know, that thing.
Oh, wow.
No, it was, Jamie, it was incredible. I mean, yeah.
And I was the MC, and I would bring people up and, you know, Bernadette would sing, have yourself a merry.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
Did you get up and sing Christina?
Oh, no, but this was my first year. And then I remember I didn't get invited back.
Oh, No. She was high on the list.
if I had been invited back, I don't know. Probably not.
Well, but it's a moot point because you weren't invited back.
I wasn't invited back.
No.
And that's okay. I don't hold a grudge. Just remember it real well, but I don't hold a grudge. Just brought it up.
No, one thing about you, you retain no bitterness.
No, none. But it was so fun. I love that. I don't know. Everything I've gotten to have the pleasure of hanging out with you has been.
Oh, we have had some great, 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 great laughs. And I agree, those Shakespeare things were fun.
That was the best. I mean,
yeah.
Could you imagine like, but we were there for only like not even 12 hours.
No. Well, you'd get there.
You'd get the script and perform it that night.
Yes.
Yeah. You'd do the read through. Then there'd be some food. Then you'd put it on its feet.
Right.
And they'd mic you, and then you'd screw around. And what if I did that? And then there'd be a dinner break. And then it was the show. But you hold your script, of course.
Yeah. But it's like a long show.
Yeah. It's like 12th night or something.
Yeah, we did it was always comedies. It was Shakespeare comedies because, you know, right. Like Two Gentlemen of Verona and then Twelfth Night and, you know, stuff like that. And the one I was going to say about the Paul McCartney one is I was the only one who had a scene with him, like an actual scene with him.
That's right.
And our director said, I want you to just plant a huge kiss on him. And it wasn't in the script. And so I did. And I kissed him. I remember kissing him. And he goes, my wife is in the front row. And I went like this to the audience. I was like, yes. And the place went wild. Like, that's how loose it was, that you could kind of like,
yeah,
do your own thing. I remember one time, I think Robin Williams, it was Robin. And Robin.
These names, it was amazing.
I know. They're like, and Robin Williams, he was doing his scene and it was going on for a very long time. What we wouldn't give to have that back, of course, in this, on this realm, but. I think, were you there that year when he was doing that?
I don't think I was there.
Oh, shit. Well, at one point, I'm supposed to come into the next scene, and Tom just comes over and whispers to me, and he goes, Christina, get him off the ground. Like, it was kind of like, it was getting to the point of like, okay, now we're 15 minutes on this one bit that he's just, he's so off the script and so off the planet.
Yeah, yeah.
It was incredible.
But that was his forte, you know, to just, especially with Shakespeare.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was your favorite? If you can remember back, I mean, I know your memory's probably lacking a little bit. Just kidding. Your amazing memory. Like, of all those.
Hey, you. What?
Rudy.
Yeah.
Do you remember one night that you played something that was like really stands out to you and you remember of that night, of that particular part of our life?
Not really.
No.
I don't. It's very weird. I have very specific memories about like my childhood or dinners and a Steve Martin, if we're driving in the car and I'll say, he'll mention something and I'll say, oh yeah, that was like early 68. And he looks at me and goes, like, cause he can't, wow. you know, that is like totally irritating to him. However, I can't remember what theater I've been to.
Right.
If I've been to that theater before, because you kind of go in, sound check and leave hotel and then fly away.
Yeah, that I could imagine being difficult to like have it be there because it's such a fast moment.
So, in answer to your question, long-windedly, I would say no.
No, well, I do. I remember because you actually, I think you played Puck a couple of times.
I'm sure I did. What a stretch! Yeah,
there's no one that could play Puck like you played Puck because you know your thing, you know your swivel walks. You're like
yeah.
You're such a sprite as it is anyway.
I was watching something with you recently. I can't remember what it was. And I actually remember thinking to myself, no one moves their hips better. You really have like, I really hope you never need them replaced because.
No, that would be a drag. you'd have to keep the old one in a frame or something.
The old hip.
It should be dipped in gold.
You know what they say about swivelly hips, you know what I'm saying, Shorty?
Like Elvis, you mean?
Yeah. One of my regrets in life, and you probably wouldn't have even asked me to do it, is to be interviewed by Jiminy Glick.
Oh my God, why didn't
you? Did we know each other when you were doing that?
You said no, Christina?
No, I've never was asked. Again, I was only at the party one time.
Yeah. Well, that was a problem. You didn't kill at the party. No, I'm trying to think. No. I did Glick after we met.
Okay. Well.
Primetime Glick started in 2001 until 2004, I think, or three seasons.
Where did that come from? Because it's literally the most unique thing.
I was doing a talk show for King World in 1999. 2000 didn't quite work out. And I wanted to have someone who could show up, you know, at premieres or junkets. And that way you get more stars in your show. And I wanted to be completely anonymous where no one would know me. And I remember making this film Pure Luck with Danny Glover, where I'm stung with a bee and I start to swell up. And on that day, everyone said, we can't see you there, you know? And I thought, oh, that's the look. So we got kind of a similar bee stung look and that, and then put a gray wig on him. And you know, then you play around with the character. First, when we first started, his name was Jeremy Glick. And then in the early pieces, we looped in Jiminy because I thought that was a funnier name.
It's so funny. It was what a perfect way for you to be completely offensive.
Yes. Dave Foley from Kids in the Hall always said, you created a character who's as mean as you really are in life. You know? So that I could say to Mel Brooks, what's your big beat for the Nazis? You know what I mean?
I think maybe I'll start watch if I can get them on my Apple TV today. I think I'm just going to spend the rest of the day watching Jimmy.
Oh, no. There's a bit of a wormhole.
What were some of the other ones, please? Tell me, because I just want to laugh.
One time I interviewed Spielberg saying, so when are you going to make the big one? The one that connects with the people. Edie Falco in the middle of her interview, she was answering and I went, shh. And it freaked her out. She said later, because it was, and I said, just because I asked you a question does not mean I need the answer.
Well, that's the thing about it is like, seriously, when like at our 4-hour dinner, which was, you know, we were there for 4 hours.
Well, it seemed like a half an hour.
It wasn't. It was 4 hours and we could have kept going. Sadie was like, yeah, so annoyed. Sadie said, that was the most annoying dinner I've ever been to in my life. That's what my daughter said.
Why?
Because she couldn't talk.
Oh.
She likes That's to be right. the center of the attention.
I wonder and where she got that from.
I don't, mostly. your deep heaving breath. She was so annoyed by us. It was really funny. But in those 4 hours, like, you are so inappropriate.
Of course I am. It's one of my best things.
Wait, I need more Jiminy Glick. Will you do more? Just like one more for me to laugh. I need
I'm
to laugh.
I'm trying to think. Well, he interviewed Ice Cube and kept calling him Vanilla Ice.
Oh, Jesus.
And he'd say, you know, you claim to be tough, but I saw you in a, you wearing a leotard doing a plie just before we now that pump your brakes, he says. Pump oh, your shit. Brakes.
Do yeah. they know beforehand what you're gonna say?
No, no, nothing's worked out. Sometimes, like I remember interviewing Alec Baldwin. Okay. And you know, you'd do it like a you'd improvise it. I mean, I would say phrases that I'd never said, you know. I take great umbrage. And I think I've never said that. What like who says that? What does it mean? You know? But I remember with Alec, we did a pass for about 8 minutes and then we break and then we're going to do another one and just, and then you edit. And, but he said, ask me about women.
Oh boy.
Just bring up women. And every woman I brought up, he claimed they were at one point pounding on his door at 2 a.m.
Oh my.
Whether it was Hillary, Dianne Feinstein, you know, anyone, you know, just, but he was hilarious. So he made that interview by his input, but normally we just improvised.
Okay, that was incredible. I mean, you know, you opened the door for like Zach Galifianakis to do two in between Two Ferns, but the thing is, that felt like everyone was in on it. Like
Two Ferns, well, just so funny.
It's so funny, but
yeah.
Was there ever anyone who actually got pissed at you and left?
No, not really. No, not really. No, no, they were in on it. They kind of knew, right? You know.
Well, I know it's you, but
yeah, I mean, it's like no.
Man, I want to be interviewed by Jimmy.
Well, you know, it's we can still do it. I just don't go around normally. Just you know, in the Glick outfit.
You don't even have to. We could just sit on the phone, and you can just tell me.
Oh, like, that's true.
Insult me.
Would you say Glick is one of your most favorite characters you've ever played?
Oh, I certainly, but you know, it is that weird thing when you do characters and create them, especially if they become known, they become like kids. So you like them all.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
Except for like Ed Grimley was pretty bad.
No, Ed didn't work, but no, but see that Ed Grimley was a very written character. I would write it all out. Glick was a totally improvised character.
Right.
Mm. Lot
what
of
other
characters.
Improvised characters have you done? Because I know, I mean, obviously SNL.
You know, Franck would go off book a little bit.
Okay, yeah.
You improvise a lot in your work, like when you're filming, like Only Murder?
They're very strong scripts and everyone's worked very hard on them. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can change certain lines, you can change certain, and you can say, my gimmick is to make the crew love me. So that I can weasel more extra takes. Should we give Marty a freedom take? All right. Okay, do your freedom take. And that's when you add maybe lines that you've written. And then they end up ignoring it.
You were very like on it when we worked. And it's like now it's so weird because now it's like they expect you to come in with improv. Like they expect you now. It's almost like this.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah. You know, I remember Anchorman was the first thing I ever did where people were just
so
loosey goosey all over the place. And then Adam McKay would be like, all right, Christina, now just do whatever you want. And I'm like, what I want to do is the script that I was hired for.
Yeah, right.
I don't know how to fucking improv. Are you kidding me? I'm sitting here with Steve Carell and like, you know, Will and these people who like literally Steve Carell taught it. Adam McKay created an entire movement of improv. And
Steve
here's me
in Chicago, Second City.
Right, yeah. A crazy town, right? So I was like, I was horrible at it. really, really horrible. I didn't understand what it was, you know, to have that.
Is there a key to improv? Is there one or two things? Is it presence?
There's, you know, there things like never deny.
Right.
So if someone says, gee, I'm holding a pen. And the other person says, no, it's a pencil. It's like curtain.
Right.
But if the other person, gee, I'm holding a pen. The other person could say, oh my God, it's leaking all over you. You know, so you keep building on it. Mm-hmm. So that's one little thing.
I didn't understand it at all. Now I do, you know, I mean, with Dead to Me, it was constantly like loosey-goosey. Obviously you respect.
Well, you know, and also at one point you get to know the character so well that you get a sense of what that character might say in a different way, not say cuz, but because, you know.
Oh, yeah. But when on our show, because our creator was the writer and she was on set all the time, it was like, yeah, it's like, you're like,
I know.
Sorry about that. That once you got it like down. Yeah.
Ben. I did three shows with Neil Simon in the 90s, and he was very much, no, it's not the.
Yeah. Mm. Very particular. And then they're like, well, Neil, yeah. I mean, I did Sweet Charity on Broadway, so I knew Neil and sort of, you know, he was there a lot for our rehearsals.
Right.
But he and I actually got into a kind of a fight because I didn't like his rewrite. Could you imagine saying that to Neil Simon?
Well, that, you know, that wouldn't be the first time.
Yeah, but I was like, God, Christina, what an asshole.
Well, you know what? In fairness to Neil, he wanted to hear it done. Like, I remember when we did, the first thing I did with him was The Goodbye Girl, a musical with Bernadette Peters.
So much.
And we'd be in previews in Chicago. And he'd say, can you try that? Because Neil would be at every rehearsal and every preview until we open. Can you try a new line for that? Sure. Can you try a second line? Sure. There's a third line. Then he'd start laughing. You're going to forget all this. I said, no, I'm writing it. I'm writing it in my arms. And I, you know. And then, after the show, at one point, I'd say, oh, Neil, I stumbled over that fourth line you gave me. I know, but we're going to cut it. I said, but I did it badly. No, you did it badly, and it's also a bad line. So he just wanted to hear it done. And so why he would be irritated with you that day, if he was, is you not trying it.
It was, yeah.
But but there were other times when you go, well, this is like, this line's great, and this new line you're asking me to do is not great.
Well, what had happened is he kind of changed Charity into, like, it was more lascivious. The whole premise of it became more lascivious, and for me,
because you were doing it.
Yeah, so Horry McHorton's doing it
exactly.
And that I didn't like.
When you hire a pro, and when I think you know what I mean when I say pro.
Hooky dooky, soda cracker. but that it would just change.
You were so fabulous in that. I saw you in that. Thanks. You killed.
Aww.
I didn't know how any human could do that.
It wasn't easy on that broken foot, bro. That was not fun.
I know. I remember.
But it was one of the greatest times of my life. But anyway, he just made it different than like the spirit of what it had been. And I was just, mm-hmm. I was freaked out about it. But, and then we changed it back. So I was like, I can't, you know, make her like slutty. I can't do that. Even though she's a hooker, but she's not a slutty hooker. Does that make sense? Is that an oxymoron? I don't know.
Well, I've only seen it with you and Shirley, and neither one were slutties.
Right. That's what I mean. It had to have an innocence to it. Otherwise, you're not going to buy it and you're not going to feel something. But anyway, this interview is about you.
I truly am just enjoying listening to you, both of you talk. You know what? It's like, it's making me reminiscent of a time. So I grew up on Long Island in New York, and community theater was my life. And Broadway was so close. It was right there. But like, we had our own Christmas part, like Marty Christmas parties, like in that community theater community. And it's just, it's everything. And it's something that I really like miss now in my life, because it's essential. I think it's just essential to keep you inspired and wanting to work. Just listening to both of you, I'm like, just so like re-inspired. And sometimes I think like, am I done with this? Do I still want to do it? And then I hear you both speak, and it's just making me remember that innate love that was in me as a little girl that nobody around me was in this business. I just fell into it because I loved it. And it's just re-inspiring me. So thank you both, because I just,
oh,
I
love nice. Hearing
stories like this. It reminds me why I wanted to do it.
Why did you want to do it, Marty?
You know, I don't know. I mean, I was just drawn toward it. I used to have, you know, I grew up in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, which is, I don't know, 65 miles from Buffalo. So we would get our television through Buffalo, ABC, NBC, CBS. And then there'd be, you know, Canadian stations, CBC, CTV, a local station. But that was, you know, about 9 stations or something. And so when I would only look at American television and I'd look at American show business and think, well, that's like, look, I could be watching something that's taking place on Neptune. It didn't seem realistic to me. So I wanted to be a doctor. And that was my main goal. But yeah, only because right. I was a, no, only because I didn't care about science. I was just a fan of Chad Everett on Medical Center. You know what I mean? It was all show business. And then I would pretend to have my own variety show in my attic and I'd record things. I had an applause record, you know, a gooseneck lamp, because even then I needed lighting.
Wow.
And so I would, but it all seemed like a fantasy and not something that you therefore would think you'd do. Mm-hmm. And then in university, I became kind of hooked.
And so were you like in the drama department? Like, is that where you...
No, I was in the drama, but I did switch from pre-meds to social work. It gave me more time. So I was, yeah, there were 3 divisions. And yeah, I would do plays and I'd do musicals and Eugene Levy and I would do it. Ivan Reitman, the director, was at university then in Hamilton.
Oh, wait, you guys were all at university together?
Yeah, Ivan was a little older, but I met Ivan in my first year and he was in his lab.
And Eugene too?
Eugene too, yeah.
Wow.
Crazy.
Eugene. You guys like freak me out that your careers have spanned over like multiple, and I'm just to make you feel old, I'm just going to say multiple decades, multiple decades. And like killing it right now. Like that is such a testament to your spirit and your talent
and the joy you have performing. I mean, I think that's don't you
well forget- I was always a, you know, and still am a Canadian, so in Canada there was no real one to make a living. You always did the 3 mediums. You did theater, you did television, you didn't phone a manager and say, is this a good choice? You'd say to them, do I bring a suit?
Right.
And so you could do Shakespeare on radio in the afternoon and then do cabaret at night, you know, or any kind of, you know, show that was hip in New York, and they do a sister company in Toronto, you audition and hopefully get it. I mean, it was like university of show business. And so by the time you hit to the States, you had done more stuff than most American actors had.
That's what I think. Like when Like Sadie has asked me, like she doesn't want to be an actress anymore, but she had, you know, said something to me. And I said, you have to, like, you've got to study. Like this isn't like just you're adorable, you're awesome, you have an innate natural talent. Like you better be like fucking good and know your shit, or else you'll be a one-off.
Yeah.
Right. And then, I mean, it's also, wouldn't you like to pick a career that you do more than 4 years, you can make an investment.
That's the thing for a lot of us. I mean, for most actors, that's kind of the deal, you know, like the star goes up real bright and it fizzles just as fast as it went up. So what do you think the secret to this, like your longevity is? Because I know what mine is, but this is about you. And I want
to
know.
Well, I don't know. I just think for me, I was able to, oh, they don't want me in the movies. Oh, I'll go to television. Oh, no, they don't want me in television. Oh, I'll go to the theater. Well, they want me in the movies again. Okay. I mean, I think it's just being flexible and not, you know, I used to have this great manager, Bernie Brillstein, legendary
Bernie,
guy.
Yeah.
And I said to him once, what's the secret of show business, Bernie? Don't take it seriously. You know, it's only show, he'd always say, it's only show business. It's not like we're not splitting an atom here. It's show business.
Yep.
So I think that, if you don't take it personally, that's a great a leg up if you're going to be in show business, because there's, it's mostly being rejected. And yeah. even if you get selected and then your thing opens and they say you stink. So, you know, you have to, you can't just be, you know, endlessly affected by this stuff.
No, you really can't. You have to, you've got to have a tougher skin than you think you need to have.
Right. That, yeah.
What people don't know is that out of, you know, 10, whatever, auditions or whatever, nine and a half of them are going to be no. And then you've got to be able to, whatever.
That and is. It's not going to be because you read badly, which you then think it is. It's because when you're finally on the other side of the table, you realize, oh, it was about also, I was too young or too old or too fat or too thin or too something.
Yep. That's what I tried to tell. Yeah.
Don't you feel too like you just, those moments where you get it or the jobs that you get it, you know, there's a certain frequency that's in a room, for me at least, that I found. You just know when you leave, I think that this was the one. Like that's.
I don't know. I remember the first time I went through not working. So I'd now been in show business like 5 years. And suddenly there were just no jobs and there was nothing. And I remember every time I went down to the subway was leaving. I would run to the subway and it was leaving. I would walk slowly to the subway. It was leaving. And I thought, when it pulls in, my luck will change. Now, so, you know, part of it, you just kind of feel like it's a stop sign and you can't, for some reason, they won't let you move forward. And then that ends.
Yeah.
I think having like, I have a friend who's trying to, she's trying to, you know, start this in her life. And I was like, you have to have abandonment. Like every, like you have to be abandoned from the outcome. And I think that a lot right. of people like have this plan. Here's my plan and here's my shit. And like, even in a scene or just in the, your future, you've got to be able to say, might not happen. And right. you've got to have Absolutely. A total abandonment. And I think that's, you know, I see you as a person who like, you live very abandoned. You know, you're so innately funny because you're loosey goosey in life. Like, I mean, I know that you've had unbelievable tragedies in your life and we all have, and that ripens who we are. But when I'm around you, I feel safe because you're just abandoned.
Yeah. Well, I certainly don't, I've never been driven by the admiration of strangers. I don't really care.
Yeah.
You know, I appreciate that some people love you and some people hate you. Some people like the Stooges and some people hate the Stooges. You know, no one's wrong.
Did you think after you left, because sometimes when people leave like SNL, for instance, that they have these like big ideas that something's going to happen. And I think most of the time it doesn't really pan out. You know, I mean, you've got Adam Sandler's kind of, you know, parlayed into this huge life and Chevy
right,
and you. But like, did you, when you left, by the way, were you fired?
Well, I only had a 1-year contract.
Oh,
Billy Crystal and Christopher Guest and Harry Shearer and I.
Wait, that was only 1 year?
We only had a 1-year contract. And so when that year ended, that was our plan. And then the following year, Lorne Michaels came back and took over. And I did Three Amigos.
Oh my God. I really, because you made such an impact with SNL, I swear it was like 5 years you were on there.
Yeah, 1 year. Wow. But then, I'd done 2.5 years of SCTV
right
before that. And then I went right into SNL.
Oh,
SCTV ended and then we did SNL.
So good, buddy. I'm going to just say this. This has been incredible. I miss you. Is there anything else you want to talk about?
No, I'm just looking at this thing. Marty, could you see the plumber outside? There is an app for hat needs to be downloaded.
Okay.
Let me just respond. Mark read. Okay, I read it. Okay. All right. Bye, guys.
We love you so much.
Let's have
dinner soon. And
absolutely.
It's a pleasure. Thank you so much.
All right. Sign yourself off.
Bye.
Bye.
First of all, thank you, Christina, for having him on. I mean, he's just, you know, it's nice to sort of meet someone who you've been a fan of for so long and like, you really understand that the joy you feel when you watch someone perform is like innately them. Do Do you know what I mean? Like, he's just some, like, the nuggets of advice that he gave that he didn't even realize he was giving, you realize are just the way he lives his life, and they permeate and they feel real and they stick with you. And I understand why you love him so much and why the world loves him so much. He's really special.
Yeah, he is really special.
Yeah.
And hilarious. And I'm like,
good,
so
to laugh. I feel like it was really nice to watch you laugh for a long time too. It's good for you.
Yeah. It's been probably since I went to his dinner. I like laugh like that. Because, and that was an incredible dinner. I wish I wanted it to last forever. And because I mean, and if you know who Sean McGuire is, he's such a sweetheart, and he and Marty, like, they talk over each other. So, like, basically, yeah, you just watch this little show happening in front of you. And then maybe every once in a while you get a word in edgewise. But yeah, for me, it was just like watching a movie. Wow. He's an adorable, amazing. Marty is really like one of my favorite people that I've ever known, not worked with, not just worked with, like known.
Yeah.
In the human realm.
Yeah.
Not in the actor's realm. So I feel very, very blessed.
I get it.
I was really, really nervous and I didn't know what to say to him. And he was so, like, very centered, you know, for Marty.
Like, really?
Yeah. That's like, he was very casual for Marty, and he was being very honest and very truthful about stuff. And it was, I didn't know what to say.
You were great. It was perfect. I feel like I got to watch two people I love and adore in different ways, and in some of the same ways, have a lovely conversation. So thanks for inviting me to it.
You're welcome. I'm so glad.
Should we pull some cards?
Let's do it.
All right. I have mine here. Do you want me to go first?
Yeah.
Okay. Become aware that there are no accidents in our intelligent universe. Realize that everything that shows up in your life has something to teach you. Appreciate everyone and everything in your life. That was a good one.
That is a good one. Okay. Mine is called, Are You Worried? Do you have many what-if thoughts? You are identified with your mind, which is projecting itself into an imaginary future situation and creating fear. There is no way that you can cope with such a situation because it doesn't exist. Mm. It's a mental phantom. Basically, thought as creative in the universe. That's the truth. Our self-dialogue is powerful.
It is.
And manifests. And I've got to work on that.
I need it today.
I need it too. I'm, you know, with all my health shit that I've been going through, which, you know, we'll get into at some point. You know, I even got a Holter monitor on because my heart's like all messed up and shit. I'm so over this. Like, I just want to be 30 years old again and be able to run and dance. It's just my dialogue is just really, really bad.
Well, let me just tell you something though. You're not alone.
I know.
And I promise you, you're not the only one that's having that and doing that. And it's not to lessen the intensity of it, because I understand, but I don't want you to be hard on yourself that you're not of like you being so responsible for things, or that, you know, that you're not doing a good job with stuff right now. It's everyone. I also feel like there's like a very intense heaviness in the world on top of everything else that you are. And all of us deal with.
I can't even look at it because I don't have the capacity to even understand it, comprehend it, or to be passionate about it, because I don't have anything left. Like, I'm about to cry. Sorry. Like, I feel like I'm failing as a mom. I feel like I'm failing myself, and I'm just going to watch some more Watch What Happens Live. I mean, when I feel like this is what I told you, I got in a fight with another disabled person at the Coffee Bean.
Yeah.
And I'm laughing about it because I listen to what I'm saying to you. I got into a fight with another disabled person at a coffee shop.
Yeah.
Because he cut me off for the handicap spot.
Fuck him.
And I went up to him and I said, sir, I just want you to be aware that I was pulling into that spot and you cut us off, like almost hit my car. And I had my cane. You know, I was obviously not trying to steal the spot for any other reason. And he starts screaming at me because I was coming in the wrong way into the Coffee Bean.
Well, let me just say, all Coffee Bean parking lots are terrible. I've never been to a Coffee Bean parking lot that has like a safe parking situation.
It was confusing because there wasn't like an enter sign or an exit
sign.
Right. It was like, come in how you want to come in, you know? And he starts screaming at me. And I'm like, yeah, but you don't understand. You almost hit my car. And I'm not driving because I couldn't drive. And, you know, I can't drive that far. He's driving his own car. So you want to have a cripple off? Let's do it, buddy. So he like starts, he's screaming at me. And I just all of a sudden, fuck you. And I left the coffee bean. I even told Sadie about it and I was laughing. And she goes, I'm very disappointed in you, Mom. I was like, shit. I thought you'd be laughing. You'd be like, Mom, you're so weird. You're so crazy. She was like, I'm really disappointed. I wish you hadn't told me that story. I was like, okay.
Yeah. Wow. All right.
That's the story that I was meaning to tell you.
I think we all need to stand up for ourselves at some point. And we all get passes for things and we need to let our feelings out. We've talked about that before. But I just want to tell you, because I'm also talking to myself in this moment, you're still here and that's for a reason. Life is not over. Life constantly changes. That's the one guarantee. It will never stay the same. I don't know if that means that we're going to both run and dance again one day, but I do know that in the conversation we had today, I've like never felt more creatively inspired again, where I'm like, I still love performing. And I really hope that you feel that too, because
I don't know.
There would be a real void without you. I don't think people give a fuck if I do it again or not.
Let's stop it.
There's a real, real void without you. And people like Marty I don't think waste time with relationships with people that are just, he's only friends with the upper echelon of creative people. And you're one of them. So I hope that you can take that from today and remember that. And I love you.
I do miss it, I have to say, but I have other goals. And here's my goal. We got to put this into the universe for me.
Let's do it. And then we say our, and so it is. Let's both say a goal.
Okay. My goal is I want to be able to just jump off the ground, even if it's like 3 inches. I can't jump anymore.
Me neither. I know.
I can't hop and I can't jump. And I want to work really hard to just try to do that, because that to me is like one step in the right direction. Just, I want to get off the ground just a little bit. Okay.
Okay. And mine is, I just want to walk with confidence, looking up at the world, feeling free and easy and no pain.
There you go.
And so it is.
So it is. This show is executive produced by Christina Applegate, Jamie Lynn Siegler, and Allison Bresnick. Our audio engineer is Josh Windisch.
If you want to show us some love, don't forget to leave the show a rating or a review. Hi, it's Jamie. Thanks for listening. I just want to let you know I am a paid spokesperson for Novartis, but this podcast is independent from my collaboration with Novartis.